Well, chainsaws are a very powerful tool to have in the garden, whether it's trimming branches or removing entire trees. But have you ever stopped to think about how a chainsaw works or the part it played in logging our forests? Well, our next guest has, and he's here to share some of his observations. This is Garden Talk on The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. And with us is James Card. He has written for the New York Times, Rolling Stone, Foreign Policy, and other national publications, and is the only journalist in history to have stories about ice fishing and deer hunting on the front page of the New York Times. Can you tell he's from Wisconsin? Between stints as a magazine editor and journalist, James worked as a line clearance tree faller. His book is called Chainsaw Love, Field Notes on the World's Most Dynamic Power Tool. Are you a chainsaw fan? Do you have questions on how to better utilize one that you probably have in your gardening shed? Or do you need some advice on finding the best kind for your needs? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. James, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Jill. It's good to be here.
You bet. Now, as I had told you earlier, this was near and dear to my heart since my dad sold chainsaws for years and years and years. So I kind of have a little bit of a background on it. But I have to mention that your title, Chainsaw Love, it sounds like it could be a Hallmark Christmas movie. Where did the name come from?
Maybe from the song Radar Love.
Okay.
I guess I had that in my head at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love it. So who did you write this book for?
Well, it was, there's a bit of advice. It's write the book that you want to read. And I wanted to read about chainsaws, and there's not much out there for chainsaw literature except for how-to and prescriptive type books. Mm-hmm. There's a few books on chainsaw carving. There's a few books on basic operations and the mechanics of tree felling and things like that. But I wanted to read more broadly about chainsaws. There's one really good book about chainsaw history, which I used as a source in my book about historical aspects of the saw. And that's about it. There's really not much else out there. At one time, there was a magazine called Chainsaw World that lasted for a few decades, but it no longer exists. So I wrote something that I would like to read about chainsaws.
All right.
So
well, that makes a lot. About. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, after reading this book, I have to say that you obviously do love chainsaws. How did this affair start with you?
I grew up with my father cutting firewood and always had this interest and fascination about it. And like you mentioned, you said your father was a chainsaw dealer.
Mm-hmm.
My father took me to a place up in Black River Falls called Wood Sales and Service. And they were the main chainsaw dealer in like Jackson and La Crosse County, that neck of the woods of Wisconsin. And I was really fascinated by them. It was a really cool place to go as a little boy, looking at these mean machines. And then from there, I became an adult. I had a, backyard, and I had a chainsaw to just do simple cleanups from storms and things like that. But two things later combined in my adult life was getting a wood stove. And also, in between journalism jobs, I worked as a line clearance tree trimmer. And it was then when I really realized how important the chainsaw is in so many things in the world, not just logging. Obviously, chainsaws revolutionized the world of logging. But in line clearance tree trimming, we're working next to distribution lines and transmission lines that carry electricity to the world. And the number one thing that creates blackouts are trees hitting the lines. And our job is to remove all the hazardous trees that are leaning out and growing towards them. One of the biggest, I think the biggest blackout in American history was in, 2003, and it knocked out a good chunk of the East Coast. So it's serious business. So without these crews of guys out there with chainsaws beating back Mother Nature every single day, we would be living in a world of constant electrical blackouts. And that's what kind of gave me the idea to maybe write something a little bit deeper about chainsaws.
Yeah, that chapter in your book I found very interesting. You don't think about all this work that people do because it just, like you said, we don't have the blackouts because people are doing all this wonderful work. It is very dangerous what they do when they clear out the trees and brush underneath those lines, isn't it?
Yeah, well, logging, I believe, is one of the, always ranked every year as one of the most dangerous occupations in America.
Right.
And then another one is linemen, mm-hmm. Guys that climb the power line poles and work with the lines. And we're kind of a mix of that. The trouble is when you're felling a tree, you can't just flop it anywhere.
No.
You have to be constantly aware of that power line and how to safely drop the tree in a semi-parallel-ish way with the line. And that can be really tricky because the conditions are constantly changing. We always have ropes up in the trees, and there's a person with a rope pulling it in the direction that we want it to drop. And we get tons of training. There's a giant manual that we have to study and pass to kind of move up the ranks in that occupation. So there's constant kind of bookwork and hands-on training. I got trained in CPR multiple times, and the safety is just drilled right into all of us on that type of job.
What are some of the more common mistakes that some of us weekend warriors can make when we're handling a saw?
Safety gear, you got to wear it. Chaps are the biggest thing. Everybody should have chaps when they're using a chainsaw. That is the most common area where people get hurt because often you're cutting down by your leg area. You're leaning down with the saw and something happens and you nick your leg. So chaps are essential. And then, of course, safety glasses. You got sawdust flying everywhere, so that's obvious. And then gas-powered chainsaws, they're loud. They're two-stroke engines, super loud, so you wear ear protection. Also, gloves are important, too. There are cut-proof gloves that I suggest every chainsaw owner should have. They're made out of, like, this woven Kevlar material. And you still might get hurt because there's different levels of the cut protection. And so it just gets a medium level protection gloves. They're kind of knitted. Some are kind of stretchy with a rubberized grip, but that will save you some bloodshed.
And that goes for those little electric saws as well as the great big gas powered ones, right?
Yeah, if you're using a great big gas-powered one, you should be wearing chaps and all the safety gear. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. With the small gas-powered or the electrical saws, now, this deal in the world of chainsaws is going electric. I think for people that previously never were hesitant about using chainsaws, this is like your entry into this.
Yes, it is.
It's a gateway drug. So the little lithium battery ones, they're really slick. They are fantastic for backyard people and gardeners and great for doing little things. And, of course, you should still wear your protective gear. You got, again, sawdust flying everywhere. However, they're really quiet, so you don't need ear protection. It's kind of like a sound of a bunch of hornets, I guess, a bunch of bees buzzing around. But, yeah, you should still have chaps. That can save you from a lot of hurt.
For sure. So, we're talking to James Card about his new book, Chainsaw Love, Field Notes on the World's Most Dynamic Power Tool. Are you a chainsaw fan? What do you love about them? What questions do you have for James? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, and you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And this is Garden Talk. I'm Joan Legeau. Join us again on Monday. Larry's going to be back to talk to Dr. Zorba about holiday cooking. Take your health questions, too. And to top that all off, we're going to hear from the weather guys. So it should be a altogether fun show. Right now, we are talking about the book Chainsaw Love, Field Notes on the World's Most Dynamic Power Tool. And James, we have a question from James. He emailed to ask, are you aware of anyone who will repair a 1970s era steel 041 farm boss saw?
Yes, I do. He's featured in a chapter in my book. His name's Dan Stuckman. He's over in Manitowoc, and I interviewed him. He was gracious enough to let me in his home and down to his basement workshop and out into his garage and out into his tool shed, where he has hundreds of chainsaws of all kinds of makes, models, and vintage. And as far as I can tell, Dan is the number one chainsaw restoration guy in the state of Wisconsin, if not even the Midwest or maybe in the United States. His expertise is really incredible. He's able to get a chainsaw that's been sitting in a barn for the last 40 years, all rusty, and bring it back to life.
That's amazing. You have a couple of really a few interesting characters in your book. That being said, we've talked a little bit about what's in it, but what else can people find in it when they're reading it?
Well, another interesting character is Mr. Howell. He was an entertainer at the Tommy Bartlett Show in the Wisconsin Dells, and he juggled chainsaws.
Yeah, crazy.
And I was able to interview him. Wisconsin has a really rich chainsaw culture, and that's why it was cool to write to, and also the publisher, the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. It was a good fit for them. But anyhow, Mr. Howell, somebody somewhere said they seen a guy juggling chainsaws, and he was a juggler. And he has a background in like circus entertainment and things like that. And so he took it as a personal challenge. So he got some small size saws and they were too heavy. So he had a machine shop cut holes in the bar to lighten them. And then he affixed baseball bat handles to the ends of the power heads. So he had something to, you know, grab a hold of when he's flipping them around. And he did it. He was able to keep three chainsaws flipping up in the air. And it took him a while to master it, but he was able to pull it off. And he's probably one of the few people in the world to do that athletic feat.
Yes, because, I mean, even with the holes in the bar, it's still going to be an awful heavy thing to be throwing around. So you have a picture of that in the book. So if someone wants to really to see that, they should definitely check that out. You do a really good job of covering the history of chainsaws.
Well, it's a little tricky because it's a lot like the automobile.
Yeah.
When people think of the automobile, they think immediately of Henry Ford. And he didn't invent it. He just streamlined the factory production of automobiles. Whereas there were inventors and tinkerers all over the world working on the so-called horseless carriage. Well, it was the same thing with saws. Everyone was trying to come up with this concept of what they called the endless saw, where it's a vision of a saw in constant motion powered by a machine. And some of them were kind of like a modern-day bandsaw, where it was this big band going in circles. But a lot of these contraptions, they were so large and cumbersome, you couldn't really get them effectively out into the woods. They were enormous. They were wheeled out on carts, and they just weren't practical. And it took many years for the saw to get reduced down to a size that could be used by one person. But before then, they were used by two people. So imagine a modern chainsaw, and at the very end of the bar, there's a guard and a handle. So one person is on the power head. That's where the throttle would be. And then the other person is on the other end of the bar, kind of holding it steady. And this is a bar that's like 5 feet long. And the power head weighs, you know, probably 50 pounds. And that's how a two-man crew would go into the woods and use these early prototypes. Eventually, Andre Steele in Germany, and Steele is the name of the company or the chainsaw manufacturer that's around today. They're probably, between them and Husqvarna, they're the two main chainsaw manufacturers in the world. Well, Andre Steele, he's the guy that pulled it all together and got the chainsaw sized down into a one operator unit. And then from then on, it was full on. It'd be the equivalent of like Bill Gates coming up with Windows operating system.
Yeah.
Before then, computers were kind of nerdy and not too many people used them, to scientists and, sure, you know, academics. But Windows brought computing to the people. And it was the same thing. Once that chainsaw got sized down into a one-person operating unit, then it just took off. They got better. They got smaller. There's all kinds of safety features and refinements. And then the loggers that were the first early adopters of saws, they're like, hey, this is pretty handy. I'm going to buy one and take one home with me. And then farmers and all rural type people started buying them. And that would be around the 1950s and 60s. And then by the 70s and 80s, they were super common.
And unfortunately, now you don't see many loggers in the woods with a chainsaw. That's becoming pretty rare, that lone logger, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. I spoke with Professor Michael Demchek. He's a professor of forestry at the University of Stevens Point. They have this great College of Natural Resources up there. And I was curious on what's the role of chainsaws in modern-day logging. For decades, they were the main tool, but now not so much. Now there's these devices called feller bunchers and timber harvesters. They're tractor-like gigantic machines. Some have wheels, some have tracks, and they go into the woods, go up to a tree. They have this moving, actually quite nimble arm or boom that goes and grabs the tree, cuts it, and then it shaves off all the branches, and you move it, the log, over and drop it into a pile. It's a really incredible sight. There's many YouTube videos out there where you can watch this stuff in action. And that's modern-day logging today. Mm-hmm. So where does the chainsaw fit in?
Yeah.
And it still has an important role, because those machines can't get everywhere. So they call them hand cutters. That is people cutting down the trees by hand with a chainsaw. And these lumberjacks are kind of like the specialized commandos. They'll go into areas where it's steep slopes, maybe swampy, hard to reach places, or maybe it's a tree that's not growing perfectly straight. It's a big old gnarly oak tree, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they come in. Also, they can judge the tree better on the ground for how to make the proper cuts. So you can add a lot of value to the final log product by being able to read the tree trunk and seeing where cuts should be made to extract the greatest amount of timber value from that log.
Okay.
Whereas that's difficult to see if you're in a cab with, you know, smudged up windows.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And you have some really good examples of that in the book, too. I particularly like reading about the chainsaw in popular culture. And to that, we've got Tom in Montello. Oh, I think we just lost him, unfortunately. But he had a question about the, and I think you actually address this in your book about the rock and roll song called The Lumberjack.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that has a chainsaw in it. So he had a question about that. I'm not sure what the question was, but that was what he was talking about. But yeah, what are some of your favorites of chainsaws in popular culture?
Well, I don't know if I have any favorites. I mean, probably my favorite one is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. That's my favorite Christmas movie. And the chainsaw makes many appearances. And there's the scene where he comes out of the garage wearing the hockey mask and revs up his chainsaw. And that's a reference to, there's these hidden references in the movies.
Right.
In that movie. He cuts off the newel post on the stairway, and that's a reference from the other Christmas movie. It's on the tip of my tongue. But the chainsaw has become now a cliche in horror films, and that's because of the number one chainsaw movie ever, and that's the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And that's the movie that really opened up the whole genre of horror and slasher films. I mean, nothing else like it had been seen before when it debuted in the early 70s. Since then, everybody now likes to throw in a chainsaw into a horror movie. And it's also appeared in gangster films like Scarface. There's a scene in the bathroom, which is, you don't see any human flesh getting mangled, but it's off the camera where it's happening, and that makes it even more terrifying.
So, yeah, it's kind of like with Psycho. You don't see it, but yeah, it's scarier that way.
Yeah, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah, the chainsaw's all over in popular culture, and it's become kind of this symbol of mayhem, of bloody destruction, and it can be. It can be a very dangerous tool. You can end up with a lot of stitches at the hospital. But one thing what's really interesting in my research is that if you're a normal person, you're not some homicidal maniac, chainsaws will not kill you in an accident. They will hurt you. You'll get some stitches, and it'll be a bloody mess, but you're probably not going to die. What's going to kill you are trees in motion. And I did a lot of research into forestry and chainsaw-related accidents, and what gets everyone are trees that are either falling, or maybe they're bouncing off the ground, or they're rolling or falling on top of a person, or maybe they are getting roped, like a rigging system that arborists would use, and that thing goes haywire and it smokes somebody. But it's this enormous amount of tree weight that ends up killing people. The chainsaws, they'll hurt you, but they're not going to send you to the grave.
Right. That's a really good point. We have run out of time, James. There was so much that we could have talked about packed into this book. I think it would make a really good Christmas present or a holiday gift for the person who loves the chainsaw in your life, right?
Yes. I mean, the winter is my favorite time to go out and cut firewood. It's the woods are clean. Everything's easy to see. And it's a great way to get some exercise on a winter day.
Yes, absolutely. And I thought one of your quotes about it being an antidote for modern vampires was wonderful. I wanted you to talk about it, but we do not have time. So if anybody wants to hear about that, you got to read the book. Thank you, James, for being with us. We really appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're talking about James Card's new book, Chainsaw Love, Field Notes on the World's Most Dynamic Power Tool. Thanks to our team for all the shows, including Claire Kniper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Roberts, of course, Larry Mueller. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thank you for being with us and enjoy your weekend.